Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome to the pulse, the heartbeat of conservative talk on the internet. It's the weekly podcast that, more often than not, has been bi-weekly or once a month lately. I apologize for that. But in this Obama recovery, one has to go out and, take the money where you can get it, frankly. Was out in Los Angeles last week. Nothing to report. Smog. That's about it. I was out there for a trade show on September 11th, oddly enough. No moment of silence or anything. Everybody just went about their business. What little business there was happening out in California, as I noted a few weeks ago, California is not open for business right now. In fact, they are preparing to slide into the Pacific Ocean, I do believe. But a lovely trip it was, except for the smog and all the traffic and the lack of business. And the dreadful prospect of driving across southern Utah again, I tell you what. But I'm back, and I'm glad to have you on board. Let's get right into the news, because we haven't a moment to waste here. As we jump right in, I've got a story from CNN, a shocking, shocking tale. Tariq Salahi. You remember Tariq and Michelle, or is it Michaela or McKelly? I don't know what her name is. Remember, they were the party crashers who got into the White House under perhaps a fabricated identification. Tariq Salahi, speaking through his manager last Wednesday, told CNN that his wife, Michaela Salahi, had been missing since Tuesday morning and may have been kidnapped. His manager, Gina Rodriguez, said, "It's our belief, as of last night, Michaela Salahi may have been kidnapped or abducted, is being held under duress and forced to tell persons, including authorities, that she is okay." Well, America held its breath. And late last Tuesday, she told a sheriff's deputy that she was with a good friend and where she wanted to be. It seems the reality show personality traveled to Memphis last Tuesday, where Journey, rock band Journey, was performing. She wanted to be with guitarist Neil Schon. And she wasn't kidnapped after all. Now, folks, let me just start by saying I support traditional marriage. In fact, I participate, and I'm a big booster of traditional marriage, and I hate to see celebrities make a mockery of marriage. And for selfish interests, I simply have to hope at this point that she's stalking Neil Schon. Yeah. He's not aware that she loves him and wants to be with him. She's just hanging out backstage at every show. Yeah. I mean, I gotta hope so, right?
Well, I'm gonna change that bumper.
I know, because, you know, Neil comes in sometimes. Well, he plays our closing music every show. And have you ever heard the album Late Night? Advice to any husband out there who wants to reignite that romantic spark in your marriage, get a good bottle of wine and Neil Schon's Late Night CD and just let it roll. You will not be disappointed. As I said, Neil does the closing music on the broad. Do you know if Neil's going to be in the studio this week? Perhaps we could ask him if he's aware of this this skank out. Hanging out. Maybe she'll show up on our doorstep looking for Neil. Anyway, it's just, I can't really say it's shocking, but it is embarrassing that she is a fellow human being. It's embarrassing for our race, the human race. But anyway, Neil, we hope that you, we hope that you're not breaking up a phony marriage out in Hollyweird or no, Washington, D.C. I don't know where she's. Is Neil married? I haven't asked him. Next time he comes by, let's ask him. We can ask him if he's married and if he's managed to peel this skank off his tour bus. Anyway, let's move on. That was from the, culture file. Let's go to the alternate dimension file. This is from WorldNet Daily. Longtime WOR radio afternoon drive time host Steve Maltzberg host there in New York on WOR, has announced his departure because WOR, the radio station, WOR, I said, has chosen ex-New York Governor David Paterson to fill his time slot. David Paterson, I said, he's going to be on the radio. In place of Steve Malzberg, who is, I think he's a Limbaugh clone, maybe even a Hannity clone. Is that possible? Since Hannity is shaved right off the left buttock of Rush Limbaugh, is it possible to clone him? And I'm not too familiar with Steve Malzberg. Yeah, I'm assuming he's a conservative. But David Paterson on the radio? Hello, New York! What? Greetings and welcome to the broadcast. So good to be on the air here at WOR. And where do I go from here? What am I doing here? Anyway, so David Paterson gets a radio gig. I would have never guessed that in a billion and 6 years. Obviously, some kind of payola going on in New York. But we'll see how Governor Paterson does on the radio. There's a long tradition of liberals failing on the radio. And I'm sure that former Governor Paterson will not disappoint. Come on in, Dave. The water's warm. I think he'll enjoy it. Oh, boy. Well, at least the folks at Saturday Night Live will still have some grist.
Yeah.
So they can do one of the only funny things Saturday Night Live has done in the last 15 years was the David Paterson appearances. The bumbling, stumbling, the making fun of the blindness, that whole thing. I mean, it's just a hoot. All right. Now, let's move into the science file. And there's no joke about this, and I don't even know if there's a point to me doing this story. I just thought it was really, really neat. This is from LexisNexis. Researchers have created the smallest electric motor ever devised. The motor, made from a single molecule, just a billionth of a meter across, is reported in Nature Nanotechnology. Tiny rotors based on single molecules have been shown before, but this is the first that can be individually driven by an electrical current. According to Charles Sykes, a chemist at Tufts University involved in this research, he says, quote, people have found before that they can make motors driven by light or by chemical reactions, but the issue there is that you're driving billions of them at the same time. Every single motor in your beaker spins at the same time, unquote. The exciting thing about the electrical one is that we can excite and watch the motion of just one molecule, and we can see how that's behaving in real time. It's pretty amazing, folks. This is a, according to the article from LexisNexis, this is a butyl methyl sulfide molecule, and it was placed on a clean copper surface where its single sulfur atom acted as a pivot. The tip of a scanning tunneling microscope, a tiny pyramid with just a point of just one atom or maybe two across, was used to funnel electrical charge into the motor as well as to take images of the molecule as it spun. The molecule spins in both directions at a rate as high as 120 revolutions per second. Pretty darn impressive, I must say. Now, by modifying the molecule slightly, the reporters at LexisNexis tell us, it could be used to generate microwave radiation or to couple into what are known as nano-electromechanical systems, which that's just got to be cool based on how that sounds. Nano-electromechanical systems. According to researchers, the next thing to do is to get the thing to do work that we can measure, to couple it to other molecules, lining them up next to one another so they're like miniature cogwheels, and then watch the rotation propagation down the chain. This is pretty amazing stuff that's going on out of our science file. A single molecule turned into a motor driven by electricity. Imagine the possibilities. It is very impressive. Congratulations to the folks out at Tufts University in Massachusetts. That's the science, the real science file, I should say. And from that, we segue into the personhood file. This is from the Telegraph over in London. And apparently, folks in Britain are becoming aware of the personhood movement here in the United States. And the Telegraph reports that anti-abortion activists are attempting to drastically rewrite laws across the United States to give fertilized embryos the same rights as living people in a new front line in the battle for so-called pro-life legislation. Okay, so we know that they're a little bit behind us morally in Europe, as they've already degenerated into almost complete capitulation to total evil in Europe. But this is the first time I've seen the term fertilized embryo used. I guess that's the English version of the ever-popular fertilized egg that's used by the morons here in America. Let's see here. The Telegraph reports that a referendum on the Personhood Amendment is to be held in Mississippi in November of 2012. That's right, the Supreme Court of Mississippi has approved the personhood measure for the ballot, and there was a Facebook posting by the Attorney General of Mississippi who said he relishes the opportunity to defend the personhood amendment in court, and he says he's always believed that a baby in the womb was a person and definitely has, at the very minimum, the right to life. And so congratulations, Mississippi, for being on the cutting edge. You're even dragging Europe along with you, maybe pulling them into the enlightenment of the human race. After all, wouldn't you agree that being against killing babies is a minimum requirement to gain entry into the family of man? Doesn't make you a good person. Doesn't make you a nice person. It barely qualifies you as a moral person, but it does qualify you to be considered a basic human being, that you're against killing babies. All right, now, back to the Telegraph article. Activists, many of whom are involved in the wider conservative Tea Party movement that has reshaped American politics over the past 2 years, have now begun collecting signatures in Ohio as well. Personhood USA, which claims on their website to, quote, serve Jesus by being an advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves, unquote, Personhood USA is aiming to hold a dozen such referendums across the country on Election Day in 2012, from your lips to God's ears, Mr. Telegraph reporter. Keith Mason, the group's president and an evangelical minister, hear that? They've promoted Keith to a minister, as well they should. Keith Mason, the group's president and an evangelical minister, said, quote, we're raising the issue up and producing the social tension necessary to change the way our country treats the unborn child. Now, the Mississippi Supreme Court has rejected an attempt by opposition groups to have the referendum scrapped, but ever-present, Bear Atwood, legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union in Mississippi, said that if the Personhood Amendment was passed, it would, quote, severely limit women's access to birth control, in vitro fertilization, and life-saving medical procedures. Lie. Three lies in a row. Yep, American Civil Liberties Union, no surprise there. Let's continue from the Telegraph article. Personhood USA is seeking to exploit the Roe versus Wade verdict's so-called Blackmun hole, supposedly opened when Justice Harry Blackmun, who wrote the verdict, said that a fetus's right to life would be guaranteed if its personhood were established under the 14th Amendment. So that is exactly what Personhood USA and a number of other groups that fall under the umbrella of Minister Mason. Indeed, a minister without a church with no walls, but probably ministering to more people on a daily basis than anyone else I know who's in the ministering business, and I know a few of them. Keith is getting right up there toward the top of the heap. We also have a comment here from the Telegraph article from Tara Broderick of Planned Parenthood in Ohio. She said the planned measure was dangerous and deceptive. When asked what that meant, well, that's it. It just ends right there, dangerous and deceptive. And then she went down to the clinic to pay for an abortion for a 14-year-old black girl or something like that. According to the Telegraph article, the campaign for personhood in Ohio is being led by Dr. Patrick Johnston, a pediatrician who is out on the streets himself collecting dozens of signatures every day. Go, Dr. Johnston. I've exchanged emails with Dr. Johnston. He's a fine stand-up man who qualifies for more than just basic entry into the family of man. He's not only pro-life, he's pro-God. And so he's elevated. He's up there with Minister Mason. What did they call Keith here? Evangelical minister. I don't know about the evangelical part. I suppose in the broader sense of the word we could say that, but I don't know that Keith would claim that moniker for himself or even the moniker of minister. But ministering he is certainly doing. Now, folks, I just read an article about an electric motor that's made out of one molecule and how amazing that seems to us. But, folks, when we talk about the unborn child, a conception and development, the separation and division of cells and the development of the human anatomy within the womb, the biological event that occurs in the womb is utterly fantastic. The unborn child is a breathtaking example of science in action, of observable science happening right in front of us. And I really believe that everything we can hope to achieve scientifically in this physical world can be discovered in understanding that biological event that we call conception or pregnancy. In understanding that, we can unlock the mysteries that would solve death and disease. I mean, that's science. I mean, that's science, really. I'm Doug McBurney. It's the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the broadcast. Folks, the womb, the inner sanctum, the womb is holy ground. There is a Hebrew euphemism for the word. It's for the word womb. It's called the depths of the earth. And it goes back to something I taught my 10-year-old daughter that I really hope I'm right about. We were in the yard, and she scooped up some dirt. She asked me what it was. I said, well, it's dirt, and everything's made out of dirt. Everything. If you break it down far enough, everything's made out of the same stuff. We're all made of dirt. And the womb is the holy of holies. And all the secrets of biological science lie within there to be examined and discovered. But we have to treat the Holy of Holies with respect. And folks, we've defiled the Holy of Holies. In fact, we've shed innocent blood there. And so there's going to be a long way to go before we are able to return to some semblance of civilized behavior. And the first step is going to be reestablishing the personhood of the unborn child, reestablishing the sacred nature of that Holy of Holies. And we wish the people of Mississippi the best in their efforts. And whether they win or lose at the ballot box doesn't really matter. It's like I told a pro-life leader last night that I met at the Colorado Right to Life banquet. She expressed why older pro-life leaders like herself are opposed to the personhood movement because, well, we might lose, and that would dishearten the troops. And I said, well, that's ludicrous. I appreciate your opinion, but it's completely fallacious and ludicrous. What you don't understand and what Phyllis Schlafly doesn't understand and what the folks at National Right to Life don't understand is that there's a whole new generation of troops who are coming up who will not be disheartened by a simple win or loss at the ballot box or a judge's ruling. They know that this is a generational battle for the soul of our country. They know that the fate of freedom and liberty rests upon the success and the victory in this battle. We will not be disheartened. We will come back year after year. Every year we will educate 1, 2, 3% more of the people until one day we are victorious. And so, Phyllis Schlafly, you better change your mind or just get out of the way. Because we will warn you we're coming, but if necessary, we will trod you underfoot. And so there, just wanted to get that out there. Tom Tancredo was pretty good last night. Alan Keyes, as always, gave a very moving and motivational speech. But I must say that it was the vibrancy of the crowd, the people, the troops in the room that really claimed the evening. It really wasn't on the dais, and none of the speakers, save possibly Pastor Enyart's incredibly motivating and astonishingly well done presentation on the progress we've made just since 2006, since we launched this latest iteration of the personhood movement. I want to thank Pastor Enyart for capping off a tremendous night. All right, now, from the war inside the womb, that holy of holies, to a war that is about to erupt in the place where once the holy of holies in the Jewish temple did reside, talking about Jerusalem. Let's go to an article. By the way, folks, Jerusalem and Israel will be the story for the next, I hope it goes on for quite some time, but at least through the fall and into the winter, that will be the dominant story in the world. Because the battle lines are being drawn and the first shot is about to be fired, in fact, this week at the UN. Let's go to the WorldNet Daily article, Dateline, the Un-New York, the Un-General Assembly speakers list. By the way, that's the UN. For those of you who might be new to the broadcast, everything associated with the UN, we give the appropriate prefix of UN, because the UN is Un-New York. And their assembly is hardly qualified to be considered general. The Un-General Assembly speakers list bestows an honor upon Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, while slighting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And the UN has already scheduled Abbas as an official head of state. That's how he's listed on the speakers list, as head of the Palestinian state, which does not exist, nor has it ever existed. And the Palestinian is also given a primetime speaking slot at noon on Friday, September 23rd. Noon, of course, when almost all attendees have cleared their hangovers, disposed of any bodies from the previous evening, and finished any early morning bribery that they may have been involved in. They're really focused by noon. Now, an address by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been scheduled on the same Friday as Abbas, but at the last possible moment, he'll be the final speaker at 9 p.m. that evening, a time slot that would not only violate Jewish Sabbath law, but would also be after most attendees are in the bathhouses of Greenwich Village, so no one will be there. WorldNet Daily points out that the UN is all but abandoned by 9 p.m. Jean-Victor Nicolo, an UN spokesman, explained to WorldNet Daily that Abbas's speaker status as head of state was merely a typo. And he added that if the Israeli delegation was not satisfied with Netanyahu's speaking schedule, well, Israel could always request a change. Yes. And I think the Germans offered a similar opportunity for Jews to request a change. You know, you prefer a different shower? Oh, that is not a problem. Not a problem at all. Let me make the change. Yeah. And folks, that's what's upon us right now, is the latest iteration of Adolf Hitler, Lucifer, everyone involved who has wanted to wipe out the Jews for 5,000 years. It's coming to a head again this week, and we need to be aware of it. And we need to stand up and speak out against it. And if necessary, we need to make war upon those who would destroy Israel. Anything else here from the WorldNet Daily article? Yes, I said make war. Make war upon them and destroy them unto the third generation. The WorldNet Daily closes saying some believe the Palestinian campaign, by the way, the Palestinians will be voting. I'm sorry, the Un-General Assembly will be voting for Palestinian statehood this week at the UN. Some believe the Palestinian campaign to be orchestrated by and partially financed by Iran, which is the current home of Lucifer. Not coincidentally, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is also expected to be in New York to address the United Nations during the same period. Does anybody have a rocket launcher to reach the United Nations? And it'd be nice to see Mr. Ahmadinejad assassinated on the dais. Is it okay to call for his assassination? I believe it is.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I appreciate you backing me up on that. If the State Department pulls up to the door, I'm going to say, hey, it was her idea. She's my producer. She writes all my material. All right. Now, more from the war file. Mayan Arikat, he's the PLO ambassador. Man, that sounds like someone Joshua fought back in the Old Testament. Mayan Arikat. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like someone who was in Jericho when the walls started coming down. He says he's a top Palestinian official, according to this article from Haaretz, which I believe was drawn from USA Today, just to give credit where credit is due. He says the future independent Palestinian state will not include a Jewish minority. Judenfrei. Have we heard that before? He says no Jews will be allowed to live in Palestine. Answering a question about the legal status of a Jewish minority in the future state of Palestine, Arikat apparently rejected the issue, saying, quote, I still believe that as a first step, we need to be totally separated. I think we can contemplate these other issues in the future. So he says, as a first step, we need to clear out all the Jews. And that means either kill them, drive them into the sea, deport them back to Russia and Poland, as Helen Thomas suggested. By any means necessary, the first thing we need to do, says Mr. Arikat, is get rid of all the Jews. But we could contemplate this question in the future. You know, which shower would you prefer, Mr. Netanyahu? Be happy to help you. Former U.S. National Security Council official Elliot Abrams responded to the Palestinian official's comment, saying the Palestinian demand for a Judenfrei Palestine was a despicable form of anti-Semitism, and he added, quote, no civilized country would act this way. Indeed. The administration of U.S. President Barry Ho, Barack Hussein Obama, had been ostensibly opposing the planned Palestinian statehood bid at the United Nations, saying that it would injure attempts at a comprehensive peace deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Oh, did I misread that? Oh, the administration of Barry Ho had been openly opposing the planned Palestinian statehood bid. I said ostensibly. I apologize for that. Probably a typo. Last week, the State Department said the U.S. would veto a resolution for Palestinian statehood in the Security Council, but Obama has yet to comment directly on the matter. The most seismic political event of yours and my lifetime is about to happen. The most seismic political event of the last 60 years is about to occur, and Barry Ho has not found it in his interest to comment directly on this potentially catastrophic event. But what has he said? There is a quote here that Haaretz put in. Barry Ho says, quote, what we said is that going to the UN is a distraction, does not solve the problem. This issue is only going to be resolved by Israelis and Palestinians agreeing to something. And short of that, we'll accept just the Palestinians agreeing to something, and of course the passing of my jobs bill right away. To the Palestinians, if you love me, go to Facebook, go to Twitter, encourage Congress to pass my jobs bill right away. Now, Barry might not be so fabulous anymore, despite what he might think. It might not all... You know, I remember I was barely politically sentient in 1980 when the when the rising star of Jimmy Carter shot across the sky and then plunged into the depths of the ocean. But I do remember that I remember my father. He was very politically preoccupied. And in watching the news, he would always rage at how the leftist media would prop up Jimmy Carter, who he thought was the biggest joke in the history of the presidency. But sometime around mid-1980, it all came to an end, and the media decided to throw Jimmy under the bus, and there was plenty of fodder to be cast upon Mr. Carter. And indeed, I predict the same thing could be happening to Barry Ho, because when the media decides to throw him under the bus, it's going to be like a rolling barrage of bus tires crunching Mr. Obama against the pavement, because there's plenty there, folks. And when they do decide that it's no longer in their interest to prop up this ridiculous president at the best, and at worst, this infiltrator and sapper who snuck under the wire to quite possibly sabotage and destroy the republic. That's at the worst. I'm not sure who he is yet. But once the media decides that they no longer care for Barry, oh, it's going to be ugly. He could be a bigger laughingstock than Jimmy Carter. Could go either way, folks. We are at this autumn, I believe we find ourselves at a critical juncture, not only in the history of this republic, but indeed in the history of mankind, as events in Israel culminate and come to a head. And as for the third time now, God offers with an open hand the opportunity for America to repent of its desecration of that holy of holies, that is, the womb. He's offering that this will be the third vote. And God is offering with an open hand now, America, giving you that opportunity to repent. But remember that God is capable of a closed fist as well. So my advice to you folks in Mississippi is get out there and vote. And vote yes on personhood for the sake of humanity. I diligently pray daily for the success, the early success of personhood, so that the wrath of God and the heathen nations that are rising around us, that we might be spared from that. More from the war file. I was just talking about Jimmy Carter. Look at this. Dateline Atlanta, Georgia. Former President Jimmy Carter says he supports the Palestinian effort to gain international recognition of their independence at the UN this month. He said, quote, "Hi, I'm Jimmy Carter. As an alternative to a deadlock and a stalemate now, we reluctantly support the Palestinian move for recognition so we can get on with wiping Israel off the map and exposing the hoax of the Holocaust." All right, I made that last part up, unquote, all of that. Anyway, I suspect that deep down in his black heart, not only is Jimmy Carter not a Christian, but he's an anti-Semitic worshiper of Satan himself. Did I call him Lucifer earlier? I apologize for that. That's a semantic slip-up on my part. I meant Satan. Well, that's not really that funny. You know, sometimes you slip up. Anyway, Jimmy Carter weighing in on the final solution as it comes to a vote at the United Nations. Palestinian, this is according to Breitbart, by the way, Matt Drudge's partner. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas is set to address the UN this coming week. This week, folks! And ask the world to recognize a Palestinian state despite concerns from some quarters that it could provoke a regional meltdown and further isolate Israel. Gee, do you think, Mr. Breitbart? Yeah, I think it might. A regional meltdown is a dramatic understatement, which Mr. Breitbart is not known for. But in this case, it's hard to quantify the events that are about to take place, if indeed they're allowed to take place. And it sure seems like there's nothing stopping the Palestinians from establishing statehood. You know, I heard, the reason I call them Palestinians is that I heard from my pastor when they were in Israel that the Arabs who dwell in the land that has at times been called Palestine, that they can't pronounce the letter P, and they're going to name their country Palestine, and they can't even pronounce that letter. So I think they'll be Palestinians. And of course, there's a high likelihood that a lot of Arabs will be glowing in the dark not too long after they try this. Because remember, Israel still has nuclear weapons and they still have submarines out there. And they can deliver those weapons wherever they need to. And there may be a target-rich environment developing there in the Middle East. All right, so we're on the verge of World War III, quite possibly, before Christmas. Before Christmas, we could be engulfed in a world war. But do not worry, America, because your military is hard at work. Here's a story from the Washington Times. With the official end of the U.S. military's don't ask, don't tell policy 1 week away, gay rights activists are pressing the Pentagon for more than just the right to serve openly. That's right. Gay personnel have won permission from at least two military branches to let it distribute its magazine on base. The magazine is called OutServe, and it's about soldiers sodomizing one another and defiling one another's bodies and spirits. And it celebrates a lifestyle that leads to death and disease, which is exactly not what our military fighting men and women need, but it's exactly what they're going to get. The Service Members Legal Defense Network has written to Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. Excuse me, I have to rinse out my mouth after saying that. Oh. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. Okay, I got to go for the mouthwash. I can't even. Oh. All right, I'm not going to say it again. Give me just a second, folks. I just have to swallow hard and just fight down that urge to just hurl all over my laptop. I'll tell you what, I'll read it this way. Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is a pile of homos in the military, has written to the Defense Secretary, who shall remain nameless, urging him to extend military housing and other benefits to homosexual spouses of queer, gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, freak of nature personnel who are enlisted or serving as officers in the United States military. At this point, according to the Washington Times, the military does not plan to recognize same-sex marriages, citing the act signed by President Clinton, the Defense of Marriage Act, that defines the union marriage to be between one man and one woman. So at this point, I like that. The folks at the Washington Times are realists. They say at this point, the military does not recognize same-sex marriage, but at some point in the not-too-distant future, they'll be sodomizing each other on national television. Oh. Yeah. At some point. But at this point, we're not there yet. Now, homosexuals are also seeking a change in the rules for courts-martial so that gays cannot be compelled to testify against their spouses. They also want the military to issue ID cards to homosexual, queer, bisexual, transgendered, intergendered, non-specifically gendered, and freak of nature spouses that may enter, so that they may enter the military bases without their military spouse. So they want the queer spouse to be able to go on base without the other spouse. After all, how else are they going to cruise the base? How else are they going to cruise? I mean, I can't have him with me when I'm cruising. Gosh. meanwhile, OutServe, the homosexual magazine, which calls themselves an underground association of homosexual service members, plans a summit in Las Vegas next month to discuss their fabulous new freedom and what they want to get from the military. And it ain't just tattoos. But tattoos could be involved. Certainly have nothing against that. All right. So there, America, as World War III is pending, hanging over our heads, your military is being prepared. Now, let's go. And I know my extremely attractive audio engineer has informed me that my preoccupation with homosexuality is a bit disturbing and at times tiresome. But I have a small pile of homosexual stories. A small pile that I have to do here. Let's just get right to it. I'll go through it. I'll go through it quickly so that it's not too painful for my extremely attractive audio engineer. This is from the Wall Street Journal, believe it or not. A new lexicon has emerged over the past decade, a kind of shorthand for men's fashion. Men may now be said to be wearing mandals, which are male sandals, Merces, which are male purses. Mantyhose, I don't think I have to tell you what those are. And mankinis, which is a male variety of a swimsuit. Yes, this is the new lexicon around androgynous clothing. Clothing that's traditionally associated with females. But now males are beginning to wear them.
I think only grandmas wear the pantyhose these days.
Women don't even wear pantyhose,
I
huh?
I don't think.
Well, some men do. Men bring it back, for crying out loud. At first, the neologisms were a kind of secret language among the fashion industry, notoriously famous for being piles and piles of homosexuals upon piles of other homos. That's what, according to etymologists, it was kind of a secret language. Yet, these terms are now going mainstream. The men's collection show at New York Fashion Week last week could give rise to even more neologisms for weird, whacked out, disgusting, disgraceful attire to be worn by the new generation of completely confused and disgusting and pathetic young people. For example, some of the new words could be poots. Poots? This is a pair of leather pants that segues directly into boots.
Ew.
Well, that's a bridge too far. I mean, that's even for a homo, you got to admit that they're trying too hard there.
Yeah.
Also, a new term, mulery. Mulery.
What?
For men's jewelry. Yeah, they're just trying
why?
Too
why
hard.
Can't
this
they
is the Wall Street jewelry? Journal, for crying out
why
loud.
Why can't they just say jewelry?
Why can't they say jewelry for fags? How about faggotry? Oh, no, that's already a word. Sorry about that. I don't want to confuse anyone's lexicon. I appreciate you digressing with me into that etymological rabbit trail there. All right, now, big news from the music world, from Yahoo. Justin Bieber rocked the red carpet at Dolce & Gabbana's Fashion Night Out in New York City, where he spoke about his own fashion choices, including wearing women's jeans.
Yeah.
He looks like a girl.
You know, he looks like a dyke.
He looks like a dyke?
Yeah.
Or that, you know. Justin Bieber says, quote, "I've worn women's jeans before because they fit me. It's not a trend. It's just whatever works, works." Bieber was responding to a question about Kanye West's decision to wear a women's sweater at some point in the not-too-distant past. And according to Yahoo News, Justin and Kanye aren't the only male stars to wear women's clothing. Actress Liv Taylor has caught her dad, Aerosmith's Steven Tyler, wearing her clothes. Now, nobody's shocked by that, right? Did he say dad looks like a lady? Steve, come on, man. It's kind of embarrassing when your daughter outs you as a cross-dresser. But hey, he's a rock star. What does he care? He's going to hell anyways. No, we don't know that, and we care about Steven. We would love to see those lips in heaven. But what are the odds?
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's move on. We've rounded third. We're heading for home, and we're almost out of time. Dateline Los Angeles from CBS. The Los Angeles Unified School District has approved an anti-bullying program aimed at reducing harassment at school for, you guessed it, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, other gender, indiscriminate gender, non-gendered, bi-gendered, and trigendered freaks of nature in the Los Angeles Unified School District. The resolution approved last week directs officials to come up with an implementation plan within 90 days so that the folks who wrote the plan and hope to teach it in the classrooms can start picking up kids right away. Do I want to say anything more about this? Anyway, folks, all this anti-bullying stuff, it's pro-homosexual indoctrination is what it is. I'm trying to remember why kids got bullied in my high school, and I can't remember homosexuality being... No, most of it was because you looked funny, you dressed funny, or you moved to Texas from New York. And we're going to beat the crap out of you for no other reason than you're a damn Yankee. Anyway, but I got bullied, and I was as straight could be in high school, and I continue to be straight, by the way. I don't want to say anything more about this story because as my My extremely attractive audio engineer is encouraging me to just get off the homosexual stories because she gets nauseous. And I understand. I apologize. Let's move on. This is from News 4 in Jacksonville. News 4 in Jacksonville reports from Miami, the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida plans to challenge the state's law requiring new welfare recipients to pass a drug test. That's right. A lawsuit is being filed on behalf of a 35-year-old Orlando welfare-receiving drug-addicted loser named Luis Lebron, who wants the right to take his government check and buy his drugs without being bothered about a drug test. The ACLU says that Florida's drug testing law is unconstitutional. It violates the Fourth Amendment's search and seizure protections. Under the law, the proposed law, I'm sorry, it's a law that's now being challenged. Under the law, welfare applicants must pay for the drug tests, and if they pass, they get reimbursed. If they fail, they can't get their benefits for at least a year and could face child abuse charges, at which point all the neocons and the Republicans stood up and said, yes! When you've missed the whole point, the solution, ladies and gentlemen, is to end welfare. End welfare. Stop paying losers to be losers. Stop producing losers. People say the government doesn't produce anything. That's not true. Through their welfare programs, they produce losers. Sadness, despondency, hopelessness. They produce plenty. Folks, get rid of welfare and you solve this problem. And you also solve the immigration problem in one fell swoop. If you're a conservative, you should see on its face that this is ridiculous. The fact that we're having to drug test welfare recipients should be a red flag to any conservative. Maybe there's a problem with welfare. Hello? For crying out loud. Is this how far we've fallen as conservatives that we can't even recognize the facts plain right in front of our face? Well, there it is right there. All right. Now, a story brought to me. Brought to my attention by my other brother, Daryl, who often does not get the credit he deserves for the contributions he makes to the broadcast. And I want to thank my other brother, Daryl. This is from Fox News. Dr. Ivar okay, there's too many vowels here. I can't pronounce this fella's name. Ivar Guyver. Dr. Ivar Guyver, a former professor with Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and the 1973 winner of the Nobel Peace Prize in Physics, abruptly announced his resignation last Tuesday from the premier physics society in disgust over its officially stated policy that global warming is occurring and that it's caused by man. Good for you. The official position of the American Physical Society, the APS, is pro-anthropogenic global warming. But Guyver does not agree. And put it bluntly and succinctly in the subject line of his email, reprinted at the website Climate Depot, the email said, I resign from APS, period. I like that. Brevity being the soul of wit and all that. Guyver was cooled to the statement on a warming theory by a line in the official documents there at APS that, quote, the evidence is incontrovertible. He said that's simply unscientific to say that anything is incontrovertible because things get controverted all the time in science. Anyway, congratulations, Mr. Ivar Guyver, or however, Jiver, I don't know what his name is, but I'm really glad to hear that he's out. By the way, a recent study says public perception of climate change has steadily fallen since 2009. A Rasmussen Report public opinion poll from August noted 57% of adults believe there is significant disagreement within the scientific community on global warming. That's up 5 points from 2009. The same study showed 69% of those polled believe it's at least somewhat likely that some scientists have falsified research data in order to support their own theories and beliefs. That's great. We're making some headway on the global warming lie, perhaps now we can focus on evolution, the biggest lie ever propagated and perpetrated on all of humanity. All right, what do we have here? We have another story from the seriously diluted politics file. The Iranian government, this is from Israel National News, the Iranian government-controlled Press TV said New York's World Trade Towers were, quote, never hit by a plane, and that fire could not have toppled the World Trade Center. And they talk about Building 7. by the way, this is the Iranian government press. You know, the folks who are about to attack Israel anyway. The geniuses, a metallurgical engineer, told the Iranians that you cannot generate heat, enough heat to melt steel. This is a metallurgical engineer named Kathy. She may have to turn in her engineering degree if she said you cannot generate enough heat to melt steel. She got to get that back issue of Popular Mechanics. So folks, if you're a truther, I mean, I hate to engage in guilt by association, but I just want you to be aware that some of the craziest, stupidest, most dangerous, satanic people on the planet agree with you. And let's just leave it at that. You're probably a decent person with too much time on your hands and a
family-friendly edit.
But let's just not to put too fine a point on it. Okay, now, here's how the story broke, folks. And I was one of the first to say it. This is from the NBC in San Francisco. FBI agents armed with search warrants descended on bankrupt Solyndra, the solar company in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's how the story broke. Now, a week earlier, I had suggested that perhaps, some of the funds were diverted into the DNC and perhaps even Barry Ho's election campaign. Far be it from me to cast aspersions on anyone Democratic or any suspicion, certainly. But Solyndra filed for bankruptcy 2 weeks ago, and, it turns out Obama had given them, a few hundred million, maybe 500 million, maybe a little more. People keep saying 535 million, but I keep trying to tell them it was only 528 million. Anyway, Solyndra officials, now it's revealed, made about 20 visits to the White House, and a top Barry Ho fundraiser was also a top official at the Department of Energy at the time that the loans were fast-tracked. His name is Steve Spinner, and he's a bundler for Barry Ho, and who, by the way, his wife is a lawyer who represents Solyndra. That doesn't look bad at all. This could be the first tire track across the back of Barry Ho when the media decides to throw him under the bus. Is going to be what happened to the half a bill that you sent over to Solyndra. That'll be the first tire track. If they decide to throw him under the bus, and I'm not sure they're ready to, because after all, it's practically a religion in the MSNBC, CNN world to worship Mr. Obama. We have another story from the Seriously Deluded Politics file. It's according to Mr. Breitbart again, Matt Drudge's partner. I said partner.
Okay.
What? You don't have to read things into what I say just because maybe I say them in a way that might lead you to, you know. Anyway, Matt Drudge's partner released a story this week. Shamans from the tribes in Venezuela's Amazon jungle held a ceremony at the Miraflores Presidential Palace last Saturday to help Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez recover from cancer treatment. Chavez, of course, insists that he was not sick, but he is recovering from cancer. When you're a communist dictator, you're allowed to issue statements like that. Check the Barry Ho administration for their latest offering on the Solyndra scandal, and you'll see that we're very similar to Venezuela. Members of the Venezuelan pagan communities danced, sang, and prayed as they invoked their ancestors to protect the Venezuelan leader. Chavez said, quote, the cancer was removed, and with the power of God and all the gods, it has gone and will never return. I cannot wait for this guy to die. I'm going to dance a jig, and I'm going to crack open a bottle of champagne when this evil, evil man assumes room temperature, and I hope it happens in a violent and painful fashion. God and all the gods. Neil! Got some questions for you, buddy. No, you sound great. Sounds awesome. You always do a great job with the gloves. We got no complaints there. But there's this Hollywood skank TV star. Okay, just go ahead and play. We're just going to let Neil play. That's what he does best. We're not looking to Neil for guidance on social or moral issues. All right, now let's close with this, folks. Just turn it down just a little bit, Neil. All right, yeah. Oh, I'll let you finish. Hold on. Dateline Homewood, Illinois, from from a radio station or TV station. Oh, WLS, I'm sorry. From WLS in Homewood, Illinois, Janet Hart, a 63-year-old woman from Homewood, was pronounced dead at 6:25 p.m. at Advocate South Suburban Hospital. A source said shortly before she died, she injected heated beef fat into her face around her mouth and chin, which she told doctors she had done before on several occasions. She had previously undergone multiple facial surgeries. That doesn't say if there were surgeons involved or if she did it herself, or I don't know why I chose to close with this story. Yeah. She injected hot beef fat, probably to plump up the wrinkles, you know, like a filler type thing. Anyway, I'm peripherally in this business. I mean, not the hot beef fat into your face business, but the whole cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery, cosmetic dermatology, aesthetic dermatology, dermatologic surgery, all of that. So it caught my interest, and it just... I want to say something to you folks out there. If you're going bald, if you're getting fat, if you're getting old, if you're getting wrinkles, just let it ride, for crying out loud. Don't embarrass yourself. Can you imagine how embarrassed her whole family's got to be? Got to answer WLS calling them up. What's the deal with your mother-in-law injecting fat into her face? They're looking at each other going, yeah, I knew she'd gone around the bend after that second facelift. Anyway, folks, age gracefully and die well. Look to Jesus Christ for that new body. And don't try to do it yourself. All right, I want to thank my friends at KGOV. KGOV, KGOV.com online. Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA. American Right to Life, and our good friends over at Theology Online. And of course, as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. We'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.